Recently, the legal profession has started to focus in earnest on lawyer well-being, and many law firms of all sizes have adopted well-being programs. These programs not only help to improve lawyer well-being, but they may also reduce professional liability claims arising from mental health issues, substance abuse, and other forms of lawyer impairment. I'm Terry Garland, and you're listening to The Portable Ethics Lawyer. Today, we're joined by Nasheeba Kitling, a senior loss prevention lawyer at ALAS, who will provide some background on the lawyer well-being movement, discuss well-being programs implemented by some firms, and talk about the barriers to those programs. Nasheeba, welcome.
Thanks, Terry. I'm happy to be here.
Nasheeba, would you start us off by defining lawyer well-being?
Absolutely. In the Path to Lawyer Well-Being, Practical Recommendations for Positive Change, the National Task Force on Lawyer Well-Being defines lawyer well-being as the continuous process where lawyers seek to thrive in each of the six dimensions of their lives. Those six dimensions are emotional health, occupational pursuits, creative or intellectual endeavors, sense of spirituality or greater purpose in life, physical health, and social connections with others.
Would you tell us more about those dimensions?
Sure. Emotional health includes recognizing that it's important to manage our emotions to support our mental health and to seek help for mental health when needed. Focusing on occupational pursuits essentially means working to ensure that you're satisfied and enriched at work. The creative or intellectual endeavors dimension encompasses something my mom always tells me, which is never stop learning. It's doing things such as engaging in creative or intellectually challenging activities and monitoring your cognitive wellness. Sense of spirituality or greater purpose in life is what it sounds like. It refers to developing a sense of meaningfulness and purpose in your life.
And what about the last two dimensions, physical health and social connections with others?
Physical health is also one of those things that is pretty self-explanatory. Exercise regularly, eat well, get a sufficient amount of sleep, minimize the use of addictive substances, and get help when you need it for your physical well-being. Finally, the social connections dimension refers to developing a strong support network. Social connections, in a sense that you belong. It also includes giving back by contributing to communities or groups.
If I'm part of the management committee in a firm, why should I be concerned about lawyer well-being or any of those dimensions you just discussed?
There are a number of reasons, including that lawyer well-being contributes to the organization's success. Dr. Emiliana Simon-Thomas has noted that the happier and more satisfied people are, the more engaged they are at work. In addition, happier employees result in lower turnover, higher client satisfaction and loyalty, and higher productivity and profitability. The ABA explained it well. Lawyer health is an important form of human capital that can provide a competitive advantage.
What about ethical reasons for firms to care about lawyer well-being?
Well, according to Professor Douglas Marlowe of the Treatment Research Institute at Penn, about 40 to 70% of disciplinary proceedings and malpractice actions against lawyers are linked to alcohol abuse or a mental health illness. So, yes, there is an ethics component to this issue. In fact, there are two key model rules of professional conduct implicated when we talk about lawyer well-being. The first is Rule 1.1, which prohibits a lawyer from representing a client when the lawyer's physical or mental condition materially impairs the lawyer's ability to represent the client. And the second is Rule 1.3, which requires that the lawyer act with reasonable diligence and promptness in representing a client.
Both of those rules relate to the individual lawyer's duties. What about firm management and its duties?
Model Rule 5.1 imposes a duty on law firm management and other partners in the firm to make reasonable efforts to ensure that the firm puts in place measures giving reasonable assurance that all lawyers in the firm conform to the rules of professional conduct. Also, Rule 5.3 requires that partners and firm management make reasonable efforts to ensure that the conduct of a non-lawyer is compatible with the professional obligations of the lawyer. In other words, law firm management is responsible for ensuring that lawyers and non-lawyers are following the applicable rules of professional conduct, including by making certain that an impairment is not interfering with the duty to provide competent representation.
Beyond business and professional conduct reasons, aren't there moral reasons why firms should care about a lawyer's well-being?
Yes, and I was saving it for last because I think it's the most important reason. Simply put, investing in lawyer well-being is the right thing to do. Consider these three conclusions from the ABA Hazelden study on substance abuse and other mental health concerns among lawyers. First, 21 to 36% of lawyers qualify as problem drinkers. Second, 28% of lawyers struggle with some level of depression. And third, 19% of lawyers demonstrate symptoms of anxiety. Firms are in a unique position to help reduce all of these numbers. Not only can firms provide their attorneys with resources and benefits for treating mental health and impairment issues, they can invest firm resources into well-being programs, and they can work to reduce at least some of the anxiety and stress inherent in the practice. The more firms do all of this and normalize well-being as a priority, the more it helps to reduce the stigma associated with seeking help for impairment and mental health issues.
I agree. So what have some firms done with respect to well-being programs?
Firms have taken a variety of approaches, as we think they should because every workplace is different. For example, one firm based its wellness program on four pillars: stress reduction, mindfulness, work-life balance, and health and wellness. The firm is committed to have an expert speaker come in and talk about these issues on a firm-wide basis, and the firm has planned a variety of inter-office events. Another firm has partnered with a third-party consulting company for its well-being initiative, which is aimed at increasing organizational resiliency. The same firm provides six $4,000 scholarships, two partners, two non-partner attorneys, and two professional staff members are awarded the scholarships to pursue an inspiration project focused on health, wellness, lifelong learning, or making an impact in the community.
Those all sound like great programs. Clearly, though, not all firms have these programs.
That's right. There are certainly some impediments to establishing well-being initiatives. Let's start with the fact that lawyers are highly skeptical. In a study by Dr. Larry Richard, lawyers scored in the 90th percentile when it came to skepticism. So not only do you have to get buy-in from firm management, but you also have to get lawyer buy-in for these programs. When people, especially lawyers, hear the term well-being, the first thing that may pop in their minds is something that's touchy-feely. Many lawyers don't know about the underlying data about lawyer well-being.
So what do they need to know about the underlying data?
Well, in addition to some of the statistics that I mentioned earlier from the ABA Hazelden report, a recent study published in the Harvard Business Journal reported that lawyers outranked other professionals on a loneliness scale. 61% of lawyers ranked above average on the scale. Loneliness can be an underlying cause for some of the well-being issues we're seeing in the profession, such as depression and substance abuse. I also don't think a lot of lawyers think about how abnormal the legal profession is in many areas that have an impact on lawyers' well-being.
These studies are fascinating. Anything else?
According to a 2017 article in the Denver Bar Association's magazine, lawyers are more likely than other professionals to be exposed to toxic behavior in the workplace, including verbal abuse, mistreatment, bullying, and competition. Perhaps this is why an Australian study concluded that lawyers have the worst health and well-being of any white-collar professionals. These are actual studies with actual empirical data. This isn't touchy-feely stuff. The data shows that lawyers are in trouble when it comes to well-being.
Nishiba, do you think that some of the lawyer skepticism might come from the belief that an inherent conflict exists when it comes to the legal industry and the push for lawyer well-being?
Probably. The reality is that being a lawyer is a very stressful job. There's pressure to bill, pressure to be available 24/7, and pressure to put out high-quality work all of the time. How's a lawyer supposed to find time to work on their well-being and still bill 2,000 hours at the end of the year? The question is, can the well-being movement really work in a billable hour model? There's a lot of debate about it, and right now, it's not clear how or if this will work itself out.
That topic could be a whole other podcast on its own.
You're right.
So what do you think is on the horizon when it comes to law firm well-being programs?
I think after we get firm buy-in, we have to get client buy-in. Obviously, clients could play a big role in helping to reduce the stress. What would the legal world look like if a client called at 5 p.m. on a Friday night, only if it was a real emergency? Paula Davis Lack of the Davis Lack Stress and Resilience Institute is working on well-being training that incorporates clients. Not only is it a good way to get client buy-in, but it also could help to strengthen relationships between clients and lawyers.
Anything else?
I also think it's a good idea to look at some of the corporate well-being programs. Law firms are behind on this issue, and corporations, especially tech companies, have been doing it for longer. One tech company's campus offers healthcare services, including on-site clinics, optometrists, and pharmacists. The company also offers programs that provide free personal and family counseling, stress management, and referrals for child and elder care. In addition, the company has a mentorship program, employee source groups, networks, and social groups to build a sense of community and camaraderie among coworkers. Oh, I also have to mention this one. One of the movies I liked growing up was Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Well, one company offers its employees 10 Ferris Bueller days, which allow employees to play hooky from work, no questions asked. These Ferris Bueller days are in addition to the paid vacation days the employees already receive. Now look, we realize not every company or law firm can or will offer something like this, but the point is that firms should be thinking about these kinds of initiatives. Although none of these things are earth-shattering, they are things that can make a difference in a person's life, help alleviate stress, and promote well-being.
I'm glad to see the legal profession has made a good start in addressing this very important issue. Any final thoughts?
Yes, I think it's important to remember that this is just the beginning. The dialogue needs to keep going, and firms should continue to work on stressing the importance of well-being and incorporating programs into the workplace to help improve well-being.
Nishiba, thank you for being with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Until next time, I'm Terry Garland, and this is The Portable Ethics Lawyer.
This podcast is provided for educational purposes to assist lawyers in avoiding ethics violations, malpractice suits, other professional liability claims, and management liability claims. This podcast does not constitute legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship, nor is it intended to suggest or establish standards of care applicable to particular lawyers in any given situation. The recommendations contained in this podcast are not necessarily appropriate for every lawyer or law firm. In determining the best course of action, lawyers should consider the applicable legal authorities and all relevant facts and circumstances. Copyright 2019 by Attorneys Liability Assurance Society. All rights reserved.